Frederick L. Humphrey was Purdue's seventh president, serving between 1946 and 1971. His tenure was the longest in Purdue history, and it came during a crucial period of physical growth and academic expansion. On Tuesday, March 1st, 1983, Frederick Humphrey died. But as many dignitaries said in the days after his death, his influence on Purdue will be felt as long as the brick buildings stand on the West Lafayette campus. West Lafayette, Purdue, aren't really that far geographically, socially, economically from Erie, Pennsylvania, where Fred Hovde was born on February 7, 1908. Nor is it that different from Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where he grew up. But it was a circuitous route that brought him to Indiana. His influence as a youth seems absolutely logical when one follows the path of his life.
The local library was just across the street from where we lived. The winters were long and cold. And I don't know, I must have read almost every book in the library. But, you know, I mean, I always like to excel in the classroom. I liked the subject matter. I liked the things I was, well, the things that described this world of ours and the people in the world.
So what were your
favorite? There were so many fascinating things to learn. A man can't possibly learn all the things he wants to learn.
But Fred Hovde wasn't just a bookworm as a kid.
We had a big lawn. We had a lawn that was a block long and a half a block wide. And this was my football field. So I owned the football field, and I was the head of football, and I was the captain and quarterback and coach of my grade school teammates, the team we had, football team we had. So I played football from the time I could hold on to a football.
And he held on to football and the principles of sportsmanship for the remainder of his life. He went to the University of Minnesota, was an all-conference quarterback in 1928, and led the Gophers to victory over his future school, Purdue. Hovde was the epitome of a scholar-athlete. He was awarded a Rhodes Scholarship for study at Oxford College in England, and he became only the third American to gain a varsity letter in rugby while he studied there. And he learned more about the character of a true sportsman and how it related to other aspects of life. Robert Topping wrote the Hovde biography, and he recounts this story.
And the British have an entirely different viewpoint about athletics than we do. I think the American attitude is win at all cost. Over there, the point is not the winning, but the playing, and how well you play the game. And he said that, in one rugby match against a team from France, he went out of bounds and he was trying to slow down, and just as he was almost stopped, he took a shot from a French player and it drove him into a fence, and he turned around and took a swing at the guy, and his own teammates were so horrified that they shunned him for almost 2 weeks. To think that he would stoop to the level of the guy that hit him. Rugby and sports in general in England were a gentleman's game. And Hovde used to lament the fact that there were no more gentlemen's games left in the United States, that winning was everything and, you know, get there any way you can.
And again, it points up that his major credo was not only excellence, but do it with honor, whether it be in sports or in the academic institution.
I think, yeah, yes. I think basically we could say that underlying his entire philosophy was the idea that the achievement was not as important as the achieving, the way we do things. And that's when he said the pursuit of excellence. The emphasis is on the word pursuit, not so much on excellence. He recognized that excellence is a tricky thing. It can be vague. It means one thing to one person and something to somebody else. Some things I think I do excellently, somebody else may think you're very poor. But you always strove to do your best, and you always strove for excellence, and I think that's really was the thing that underlay his entire philosophy.
He also earned a B.A. degree and a Bachelor of Science in the Honors Program in Physical Chemistry. The year was 1932.
In the next 14 years, he would work in various positions at his alma mater and at the University of Rochester, and he served in some vital governmental posts during World War II. It was during that time he was recommended to Purdue as a potential university president. And in January 1946, he accepted that position. He was only 38 years old, and he faced a task as large as any war effort.
Nothing really had been done for 5 years. Mm-hmm. There was no building at the university, no, not much in the line of repairs. You couldn't get anything. Equipment was difficult to get. Building materials difficult to get. And that extended on after the war. And right after the war, 12 million GIs were mustered out of the armed forces, and a great many of them wanted to come and finish their education. So we went right up to 15,000 students very quickly with the old 1941 university. And we had to build all kinds of temporary buildings. We built temporary buildings all over the place. There's still some left.
So those were your immediate concerns, was the enrollment in building the buildings to house the
people? Well, I mean, your concern was more than that. You had all this enrollment, you had the GIs, and you had, for the first time, you had the married students. You had to provide for them. So they posed a whole new problem for the university. What do you do with all the married students and their wives? And then you had problems of recruiting faculty. You had facilities, equipment problems, library problems, and all the problems in the book. And they were all magnified because every other university had the same problem, and they were all searching for the same thing, great competition for faculty people. You never could find enough mathematicians or physicists or engineers to do the teaching job that you wanted done. And you had to do all kinds of makeshift things to get through.
He made Purdue University, which was a good school even then, into a world-known scientific and research institution, as well as a very high-quality institution with a tremendous reputation. That in a nutshell, is the story. He did add to the university's educational artillery, so to speak, during his tenure. Of course, we added the veterinary school. We added the Krannert School of Management and the School of Management, the undergraduate school. He probably did more than anybody prior to his coming, or prior to his time, in the sciences. And I think that Purdue became quite widely known for its sciences in mathematics, physics, biologicals, especially in the biological sciences. And he also, believe it or not, because he himself was an engineer, a scientist, did a tremendous amount of work and insisted that Purdue have a good humanities program. And the School of Humanities, Social Science and Education indeed was founded in 1962, I think it was, because of things he wanted to see done here.
Well, you set your sight to do everything do everything with excellence. You make excellent buildings, you equip them with the finest equipment, you try to get the finest staff, you try to have the most, the highest standards, you try to do everything. Everything that man does is known to other men. And some people do things better than others. And what you try to do is you simply try to make your institution, its people, and everything that you have to work with to perform the teaching function, you try to maximize its quality and its efficiency and all the rest of it. I mean, there's nothing magic about it. You just get organized to get everybody to do it.
And that may have been his secret. Like a football coach, he gave each member of his team a task and expected them to do it without the need for constant supervision. And that matched his educational philosophy.
So my whole attempt was to do what we did here at Purdue extremely well, try to have the finest kind of environment in which to live and to learn. Your environment's very important about learning, as far as your learning is concerned.
That's right. It's self-education is most important, isn't
right.
it? I remember one thing you did say is that the most important thing a college or university, one of the most important things a college or university can give to an individual is the ability to go on and continue to educate oneself throughout one's life.
Well, that's what you face. If you become a member of a profession, you face a whole lifetime of learning. If you don't, you fall behind. You become outmoded very quickly. The pace of development for all of the professions is a fast one.
And that, I think people need to realize that school doesn't stop with a university. Education doesn't.
One of the real purposes and outcomes of the university education is to teach you to do this under your own steam and enjoy it.
And you continue to do that from Oxford on,
I think. You do it to the extent that you're willing to discipline yourself to do it. You're lucky if you have good teachers. They make it more interesting, but you don't need to have good teachers if you want to learn. In fact, you can learn without any teacher at all.
But a team needed a coach, and Hovde needed football. He went to the football practices regularly and helped fire up team and fans at pep rallies.
This gathering tonight shows them that we're behind them, and I think all of us here want to say to every member of the team, good luck, and give Northwestern everything you've got.
He had an uncanny way of selecting the right people who complemented one another, especially at any senior staff level and at the dean's level. But he was not the kind of a person who gave someone a job to do and then turned around and did it for them. He gave them a job to do and made it perfectly clear what results he expected, and then got out of the way and let them do their job. And when they'd sometimes come to him with little petty questions about this or that, he would tell them in no uncertain terms that that's what they'd been paid to make decisions about, and that he expected results. He didn't really want to be bothered with the day-to-day paperwork, the little brush fires that come along, and as a result, I think it freed him up to do the long-range kinds of thinking that a university president really has to do.
Just listening to you talk about the man and knowing that he had a background in competitive sports and especially football, I can see some similarities, some analogy between football coach and a university president, because the way he handled his university and the people that he brought together in his team would be very similar to a football coach with strategy, etc.
Yes, and every man has his assignment, and that's the way he wanted the university to operate.
A team player.
He was a team player.
But during this booming time for the university, for the country, even for the world, what was Hovde's real role? How much did he help create the situation, and how much did the situation help make him the university president he became? Biographer Bob Topping.
Part of your question refers to the fact that there was a great deal of expansion. Did he bring it about? No, I think the expansion would have occurred whether he was president or not, whoever was president. He would have had to been totally incompetent to not permit expansion here. It would have occurred. But the point was that he was farsighted enough and had this tremendous intellectual leadership ability that channeled Purdue into the missions that it now has, and the missions that it had previous to his coming here. But he totally strengthened those. And he thought that he didn't, for example, want to start a lot of programs that were being already offered, good programs, excellent programs being offered, for example, by the other state schools. He knew higher education, and he knew enough about it. He had had enough experience and enough training and had come under the influence of a great number of other people in his early career who were in higher education to see what was going to happen and make sure that it happened right. And although the phrase is overworked, he did pursue excellence. And to the extent that the state was willing to provide the means, he did so. He provided excellence.
And things went amazingly well for president and university. Both gained national and world acclaim through the years. But the boom of the late 40s and early 50s led to the youth explosion of the 60s, at a period that confused and troubled many people, including Frederick Hovde.
I asked him when we were doing the book, what would you do differently? And he had a very difficult time thinking of anything that he would do differently. And he's extremely proud of this place. I think the thing that troubled him most as he retired in 71 was the student unrest years at the end of the 1960s, related not necessarily to Purdue University. It occurred all over the country and had its roots in the politics of the times and in the Vietnam War, of course. And he was no different than any other university president, I don't think, in that he was bewildered at times by this kind of behavior, which he just was completely antithetical to anything he thought should ever occur at a university campus. A campus is a place, in his view, for rational thought, no matter what that thought is. You could come here and think the unthinkable, but it had to be done in a rational manner, and many of the things he saw happening in those years were not rational, civilized behavior. And I think that really troubled him very deeply.
But in the time of his turmoil, there were some great triumphs. A 1967 Rose Bowl victory for his football team. And a Purdue grad became the first man on the moon in 1969.
Greetings, distinguished alumnus. Upon the nomination of the president and the faculty, and by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Board of Trustees of Purdue University, I now admit Neil Alden Armstrong to the degree Doctor of Engineering honoris causa. For courageous and dedicated personal contributions to the technology of supersonic flight and lunar exploration, and for the finest exemplification of those priceless human attributes of character, competence, and rigorous self-discipline demanded of all men who would help mankind reach for the stars.
But Hovde himself had already reached most of his stars. That same year of 1969, at the Purdue Centennial Convocation, he announced the time had come for a change.
I, like all the rest of the members of the university, serve in my assigned duties as your president under the terms of a personal service contract. And one of the requests of the trustees to me as an individual, existent for a long time, was the request that the board be notified at least a year and a half in the event of my decision to retire. I gave them notice to this effect last spring so the Board of Trustees could inform itself with respect to the processes and procedures it wished to institute in connection with my successor, the choice of my successor. My final year then as your president, it will be the second year of this current biennium, and I have told them that I wish to turn over my duties and responsibilities as president of this university effective 30 June 1971. Very few individuals have had the wonderful opportunity of serving as chief executive of any major organization during the period of such momentous growth as our country has experienced during the last quarter century. It has been my great privilege to serve as president of this wonderful institution during all the post-war years, which saw the development and the peaceful use of atomic energy, the development of television and other media of communication, the development of jet aircraft, which has made our world smaller, development of man's first venture into the world of space, which culminated in the landing of a man, a Purdue man, on the moon, and to say nothing of a host of advancements throughout the entire social, economic, and cultural structure. All these years, I've been privileged to have a part in the preparation of thousands of talented young men and women who have received their education at this university and have taken their places in our society with distinction to themselves and to the university they attended. In turning over my duties and responsibilities to your next president, my deepest personal satisfaction will come not only from the knowledge that the past is but the prologue to the future, but also that this institution will unquestionably continue to grow in excellence. Nothing can stop it. But also from the wonderful people of this university who have been my valued friends and much admired colleagues throughout the years of our association in the great work of this institution.
But even in retirement, that institution remained a major part of his life.
Of course, you can't just turn it off after 25 years, I'm sure. Partly that, but partly the fact that he had interests outside the university that he was still engaged in. He was a member of the board of directors of a number of corporations, not necessarily foremost, but General Electric, for example. And so he had these kinds of business things to deal with. But Purdue University became his life. You can't spend 25 years at this place, as he did, and be involved so deeply as he was. It was part and parcel of his being, and people came to visit him, and he liked the environment here. And even after he became somewhat slowed down by the stroke he had in 1978, he continued to come to the office.
And even after he suffered a stroke in 1978, he continued to try to maintain his competitive sports spirit. Board of Trustees President Emeritus Maurice Kanoy remembers Hovde playing golf, forced to use a crutch to get around the course due to paralysis. Some of his golf swings would throw him off balance, even throw him to the ground. Yet he would slowly pick himself up and move on to hit the ball again. A courageous man, no doubt, and widely recognized as brilliant. But to some, he had a reputation of being aloof and cold. Biographer Bob Topping says that really was not true.
One of his close friends, Mr. O'Bannon, used to say that if he went into a large gathering of people, he was not the kind of a person that went around looking for another hand to shake or another back to slap. But he was an extremely congenial guy, and a lot of the misunderstanding was that he was cold and aloof, and he didn't mix well with the student body, or he didn't mix well with the faculty. And in fact, he was totally concerned about the faculty and the staff. And a lot of times, as Harold Stokes said in his 1959 book about the American College President, the faculty and the students often don't know how far the president has gone to defend them.
Fred Hovde did have a good sense of humor, even if the joke was on him.
Now, one of the oldest and most moss-covered practical jokes favored by the student body since time immemorial is to leave a message to call Fred at a certain number. And, of course, my family have a standard routine when the telephone rings and they ask for Fred. Mrs. Hovde answered the telephone, and the young man said, "Is Fred there?" And she said, "Are you a Purdue student?" And he said, "Yes." She said, "Well, you're calling President Hovde's home." He said, "Who?" She said, "Are you a Purdue freshman?" He said, "Yes." She said, "Do you know who the president of the university is?" He said, "Why, yes, it's Roberts."
But it was a president named Hovde who was honored in 1971 upon his retirement, and it was at that Indianapolis dinner that President Richard Nixon may have pointed out Hovde's true legacy.
I think of what we think this man will be most remembered for. Well, those who remember football will remember him for that, and others who think of his service in war will remember him for that. But I think on a night like this, that the nation will remember him for the monument that he really leaves. And that monument is 80,000 men and women. 80,000 men and women have graduated from Purdue in the 25 years he has served as president. And they have gone forth. They have gone forth throughout this land, throughout this world, as a matter of fact, serving the cause of progress, the cause of understanding. They have been men and women with brains, good educations, but more than that, they have been men and women with character. And it is that that Fred Hovde stands for, brains and character.
The character of a sportsman, which may also have been his biggest fault, as Purdue Vice President John Hicks noted at the Hovde Memorial Service.
When I myself think of Prexy, I guess the one overwhelming quality that always comes to my mind was his immense and wonderful loyalty. Loyalty to his family, his friends, his university, his country, his ideals. He was a great athlete, and he had the athlete's feeling for his team and his teammates. While a brilliant man with an orderly, logical mind, he sometimes let this loyalty overwhelm his logic, so that he stood by and defended some of us when we were not worthy of his defense. What a wonderful fault to let love and affection overcome your better sense.
So what was the quality of this man?
He always used to say that the quality of a university president most often does not depend upon the man's experience or his knowledge, but on his character and his intelligence. And what he was really saying, I think, was that somehow there has to be some great wisdom employed. Not that he regarded himself as a wise man, but he was a wise man, and I think that he gave more to Purdue University than he got from it. But yet it was his life.
My life was my own, and I enjoyed it. I had a lot of interesting things to do and worked with a lot of interesting people and was a lucky man. I always said I had a lucky star.
Frederick L. Hovde, Purdue president, 1946 to 1971. To many, just as much a part of this campus, of the history and the legacy of Purdue University, as agriculture, engineering, and science curricula, as red brick buildings, as winning athletic teams.
Hail, hail to old Purdue, all hail to our old.